Shabbos, Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, 11:1. We continue to discuss the halachas of hotzah, transference, and here we're going to discuss the tolda, a tolda of hotzah, which is called zrika, throwing. So again, just remember that the Torah has, as it's of hotzah, transferring from Rosh HaSiyachid to Rosh HaSarabim, we also have hachnasa, bringing from Rosh HaSarabim to Rosh HaSiyachid. In addition, we have the separate rule, we have a tradition that you can't transfer for almost in the Rosh HaSarabim, that's ma'avir, transference. Here we have a tolda of that, which is zrika. If one would throw instead of carry, but he instead of transporting by hand, he transports by throwing an object either as a hotzah or a chanasa or a ha'avara, all three of those things, meaning you throw in to Rosh HaSarabim, you throw in to Rosh HaSiyachid from Rosh HaSarabim, or you throw Dalar Amas in the Rosh HaSarabim, all those things will also make you liable, as the Mishnayos will now lay out. So the first Mishnah says, Hazorik Rosh HaSiyachid Rosh HaSarabim. If one throws something from Rosh HaSiyachid, private domain, to Rosh HaSarabim, to the public domain, remember you need to have an Akira and a Hanacha and also a transfer from one domain to a second. So you have that over here. You pick up the ball in the Rosh HaSiyachid, let's say. You throw it to the Rosh HaSarabim where it comes to rest. So you have all three components, the Akira and the Rosh HaSiyachid, the Hanacha, the coming to rest in the Rosh HaSarabim, and the transference across the domain line. So then you'll be liable, and the same would go in reverse. Rosh HaSarabim, Rosh HaSiyachid. If you transfer by picking up a ball in the public domain, throwing it to the private domain, it comes to rest over there. Again, you have an Akira, you have a Nacha, you have a transfer between two domains, and that being the case, again, Chayav. What about Rosh HaSiyachid, Rosh HaSiyachid, Rosh HaSarabim Be'emtza? What if you play a clever game? You play catch with someone from his house to your house, and in the middle between your two houses is the Rosh HaSarabim. So you have the ball, and the ball is going from your private Rosh HaSiyachid home through the window to your friend's private Rosh HaSiyachid home, which is also Rosh HaSiyachid. That transference is that would be mutter midorais, to go from yachid to yachid. Don't forget that midor ban there's a chi of making an heir of chatzeros to connect two differently owned, you know, two different Rosh HaSiyachid that were owned by two different people, but that's on our topic right now. Here the point is you're actually transferring that ball through the Rosh HaSarabim, and that would seem at first blush to be first the hotzah, when you take it out of your house into the Rabim, and then hachnasa from the Rabim to the Yachid. The problem is, or the potential problem is, that you haven't got a hanacha. It doesn't come to rest in the Rosh HaSarabim. So the question is, are you off the hook? And indeed, the hacham and the halach is, yes, you are off the hook. You're playing with fire, but ultimately, since there's no hanacha in the Rosh HaSarabim, you won't be liable. And Rabbi Kiva disagrees. The Mishnah says, inside, Rosh HaSiyachid, the Rosh HaSiyachid, if you're throwing something from a private domain to a private domain, Rosh HaSarabim Be'emtza, that thing you're throwing is passing through a public domain. So, Rabbi Akiva is Machai, Rabbi Akiva says you'll be liable for a Chatas, but the Chum say, no, poacher, you're exempt. The Chum, for the reason I explained before, there's no coming to rest, no Hanacha and Rosh HaSarabim on the way out, and same on the way in, no Akira. The Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Rabbi Akiva holds that kluta k'min shechuncha damya, that if something is in the airspace, the ball is in the Rosh HaSarabim, it's as if it's come to rest for an instant, like if you took a photograph, you'd see the ball for a moment at rest, if you will. So it's in the airspace, it's as if it's like come to rest in the airspace, and that being the case, you'd be liable just for passing through. So to a great degree, Rabbi Akiva sort of is abrogating the whole point of the hanacha in the conventional sense. It's not never needing to come to rest to be considered to be munach, to have hanacha. Nevertheless, you have to remember that the Rosh HaSarabim, which is where the public does its thing, we defined as a place that is 16 amos or more wide, that it's open, so it's wide and open, and there's a lot of thoroughfare of traffic through that Rosh HaSarabim. It's where the public lives and does its thing. The Rosh HaSarabim only extends vertically up to 10 tfachim, waist height roughly. Call it a yard high, a meter high roughly. So that means that above 10 tfachim, above waist height, that's not where the public interacts, and that's considered to be part of the Makom Patur. It's an exempt area, which will mean that if you and your buddy are playing catch on the first floor of the home and the ball is going through the air and the ball is staying within 10 tfachim, or at least passing through 10 tfachim, of the ground, so then Rabbi Kiva will hold your chayav. But if you're playing catch from the second story of your homes, through your second story windows, you to your friends, and the ball is passing over the Rishus HaRam. Even Rabbi Akiva will agree that you're exempt because the ball, although he holds Kluta K'misha Chunach Adamya, that if it's in the airspace, it's as if it's come to rest there. Coming to rest above 10 tefachim off the ground is not in the Rishus HaRam. That's also a Makom Patur, an exempt area. And that being the case, even Rabbi Akiva would agree that throwing the ball from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid on the second story above 10 tefachim would not be subject to liability because the ball never comes to rest, even through a kluta, even through like being absorbed in the airspace, in Rosh Hashanah proper, because Rosh Hashanah does not go more than 10 tefachim above the ground. Shabbos, Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Base, 11.2. The first word in the Mishnah is ketzad, which would mean how do we illustrate or explain or under what circumstances does the previous halacha apply. So if we leave that ketzad in, we're coming to explain how in the previous Mishnah we said the Chachamim exempted one from throwing through the Rosh Hashanah, and now we're going to explain that a little more. Many don't have this word ketzad in at all. And the proper girsas leave the word ketzad out, and this Mishnah stands on its own, not elaborating on the previous Mishnah, which is really the straightforward reading of the Mishnah. And in this Mishnah, we're focused primarily on a new thing called moshit, and not really on zrika, on throwing like the previous Mishnah. So moshit is handing over. And if you recall, the base of all the malachas is what went on in the Midbar, in the desert, is part of the construction and assembly and maybe even the functioning of the Mishkan. Now, you'll also recall that I said back in the very beginning of the first Mishnah that Hotzah, transferring, is considered by Tosos as a malacha gerua, almost like a second-class citizen malacha. And part of the reason is because, unlike the other malachas, where one is clearly investing his creative capacity to transform the world by cooking or tearing or weaving, whatever the story is, when it comes to Hotzah, transferring, the world isn't really being transformed in the same way. There's just sort of a relocation of some object. But part of it being a malacha gerua, a secondary, like a lower inferior malacha, is that inferior, good translation, inferior malacha, is that we can't extrapolate so far and wide and extensively in the realm of Hotzah as one can with other malachas. So in other malachas, if there's a malacha, let's say the malacha of Zorea, which is to plant a seed, literally, and that was part of the malacha done for the Mishkan, but the concept of Zuriya is facilitating plant growth, and therefore anything that facilitates plant growth is at least a tolda of Zuriya. So watering a plant, or arranging for more light to go into a plant, or fertilizing a plant, all could be Zuriya. Nothing to do with actually putting the seed in the ground. You can extrapolate based on the principle. Not quite the case when it comes to Hotzah, transferring. If something occurred, something which is like transferring, but not exactly like how it was done in the context of the Mishkan, so it won't be the Malacha Doraisa at all. Now, this is where Moshit comes in. So Moshit, handing over, was done in the Mishkan. What happened was they had these agalot, these wagons, which were used to transferring the krashim, these heavy boards that were used, and also in the Mishkan. So what they would do is they would take these two different agalot. Each agala, each wagon, was 10 tefachim off the ground. So the top of the agala is Rishus HaYachid all to itself. Okay? And they would line two, one in front of the other, and they would then load up this heavy keresh, the board, onto, let's say, the front wagon, and then from atop the wagon, they would hand it over to the second wagon behind it. Some Rishonim learn that the keresh would span the two wagons, and some just understood it would go from the first and then onto the second. Either way, the point is that they went kind of, they were lined up front and back, and then the keresh, the board, would go from the front to the back. In contrast, what was not happening, this is sort of the essential nub of the Mishnah, is that they were never passing krashim from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaYachid across the Rishus HaRabim, not transverse the Rishus HaRabim. It was always in the same direction as the Rosh Hashanah, just, you know, from one Yechid to the next, on the same side of the Rosh Hashanah, so to speak. And that being the case, the Mishnah is going to say that if you're doing Hoshata, you're doing Moshit, on the same side of the Rosh Hashanah, from one Rosh Hashanah to the next, over the Rosh Hashanah, even above 10 Tfachim, above the Rosh Hashanah, even though we said in the previous Mishnah that above Rosh Hashanah, above Ten Tefachim is no longer the Rosh Hashanah, it's Mekom Patur, since in the context of the Mishkan, they did pass over these boards from one, the top of one agala, meaning above 10 tefachim off the ground, to the top of another agala, and again, above 10 tefachim off the ground, and they were passing over the Rosh Hashanah between the two agalot, but at a height of above 10 tefachim, since that was part of the assembly and reassembly of the Mishkan, one would be liable for that. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad, again, either Ketzad to reflect back on when Zerika one would be Chayev or not Chayev, the previous Mishnah, or we can leave that word out, Ketzad, according to some of yourselves, and just now we're talking about a new thing called Moshet, handing over. If you had Shtei Gezustros, you have two balconies, Zu Keneged Zu, one on either side opposite the other of a Rosh Hashanah. So just think, you got Fifth Avenue in the middle of New York City, and you have two apartment buildings, and you have one on this side of Fifth Avenue, one on that side of Fifth Avenue, if there are any, yeah. And you have Umoshit, and then one hands over, or Vizorek, one throws across over Fifth Avenue, Mizulazu, across the, over the street, so then Pater. Then the transference over the Rosh Hashanah will be Pater. The reason why is because if you're doing Zrika, you're doing throwing it, so again, you're too high, and if you're talking about Moshit, so that is not the way it was done in the context of the Mishkan. They didn't transfer by handing over, by traversing the Rosh Hashanah, just going front and back. So in both the cases, you'd be putter. And certainly there was no throwing anyways. No one threw krushim. So above 10 tefachim for throwing is always going to be exempt because there's no such thing as even Moshet, of Zorek ever, even of the krushim, even throwing, even of the boards, above 10 tefachim. Hayushtein Diota Achas, if both of the balconies are on the same side of the street, so you have one apartment building on Fifth Avenue, and it has, you know, two neighbors' apartments, you know, 2A and 2B, and they have balconies near each other, and between the two balconies is airspace, beneath them is Fifth Avenue proper, Umoshet, and one passes something over, like let's say a broomstick, from 2A's balcony to 2B's balcony, so that's where each balcony is Rosh Hashanah Yachid, because it's going to be, you know, at least four almost on a side, 10 tefachim off the ground. So each of the balconies is Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and one hands over the broomstick from 2A's balcony to 2B's balcony, then Chayev, they'll be liable, because that is good old-fashioned Moshet, as they had it in the time of the Mishkan. In the Midbar, they would transfer by hand the long krushim from one agalah to the next, on the same side of the Rosh Hashanah, the same way these two people are passing over the broomstick on the same side of the Rosh Hashanah on Fifth Avenue from one balcony to the next balcony. The Hazorik Pator. But even those two guys, the two guys living on 2A and 2B, if they would throw the broomstick across from one to the next, so they would still be Pator, because they would never throw the Krushim, and therefore you haven't got like a total Moshet, if you will. And we said that throwing above Rosh Hashanah, above Ten Tefachim, even though it's passed through the airspace, even Rabbi Akiva would agree that you're not liable for that because you're not in Rosh Hashanah. Fine. Why is this the case? As I sort of already said in my introductory remarks, Shekach Haisa Avodas Leviim, because the following is how the Leviim would do their Avoda in terms of transferring these Krushim. Shtei Agalos Zu Achar Zu Rosh Hashanah. There would be two wagons, one in front of the other, one behind the other, in the Rosh Hashanah, Umoshitin HaKrashim Mezulazu, and they would hand over, the Levim would hand over these boards from atop the first Agala to the second of Lo Zorkin, but they would never throw those Krashim. And therefore, if one is Moshit, then hands over from Agala to Agala on the same side of the Rosh Hashanah, so then you'd be liable, but if you would throw it or across the Rosh Hashanah, then you'd be Pater. Period. Okay, new paragraph, like a new topic here in the Mishnah. New case. So the main case we're talking about here is that someone dug up, let's say, a well in the middle of the Rosh Hashanah. We're talking about a bore, just to be technical and correct here. In antiquity, they had three ways of having a water supply. They had a be'er, base aleph resh, that's really a well. A bore, base vav resh, which is like a pit or hole, was a cistern. And the difference is that a be'er, you would sort of dig into the ground and find water in the water table beneath the ground. Whereas a bore, you're not tapping into any water beneath the ground. You're simply making like a big storage hole. They would plaster it so it sort of holds water. And then when it rains, the rainwater would rain in and like it would be caught inside the bore for safekeeping the cistern for later. Third possibility, of course, is an aqueduct to transfer water from one place to another place. In any case, here you've got a bore being dug, which is a pit in the middle of a Shusaram. But for whatever reason they're doing that. You can imagine, however, just for your imagination, probably how you imagine a well. Okay, so they're digging a hole in the ground, let's say for water purposes. So when you dig a hole in the ground, what happens is you got to put the sand that you dug out the hole in the ground somewhere. And the normal thing to do would be to put it around the hole to make like a wall. So like so no one falls in, you can maybe store the bucket up there or something like that. So the point is, we're going to focus on someone digging a big hole in the Rishus HaRam and then piling the sand that came out of the hole around the hole. So now the question will be the measurements that would constitute this new hole slash the rim of earth around it that you built up, the measurements to make that be Rishus HaYachid in the Rishus HaRam. So the Mishnah says, Chuliyat HaBor, the sand that you pile around the hole, Vasela, and the same would be true if you have a big rock in the Rishus HaRam, but let's get back to the rock later on. Shehein Gavon Asar Varach Banarba, if the rim of sand around the hole is 10 high and 4 deep, so then Hanoto Mehen Vanosan Al Gaban, if you take from the embankment, the sand rim, or you put onto it from or to the Rishus HaRam, then it'll be Chayev. Pachas Mikan, if it's less than the requisite 10 high and 4 wide, you'll be Potter. Okay, so the way the bartender has the picture and explains the Chiddush of Mishnah about the rim of the around the hole is that, let's say your hole is only 7 tefachim deep. Okay? So a 7 tefach deep hole doesn't make Rishus HaYachid. It has to be 10 tefachim deep. But if you then pile up the earth around the hole, and let's say the pile that you make makes a rim that's 3 tefachim high. So now, from the top of the ridge, the rim, which is 3 off the ground, to the bottom of the hole in the well, or the pit, which is 7 tefachim below the ground, you have a total of 10. So the Bartender understands that you can add those two together and say, since the ridge, if you measure from the bottom of the hole to the top of the ridge, is 10 tefachim high, that'll reach the threshold 10 tefachim we need to make this to be Rishus HaYachid. And then again, assuming that the whole ridge is 4 tefachim across, so then you've got now something that's just 4 tefach wide and 10 tefachim deep, offset, which is by 10 tefachim, because you're including the depth of the well. So that can make the ridge, the rim around the hole, be Rishus HaYachid, that if one would take from the Rishus HaRam onto that ridge or vice versa, then they would be liable. Now, that's a big chiddush, of course, because if you think about it, from the outside of the well, all you're seeing is a small ridge above the ground. You're not seeing something that's really offset by 10 tefachim. It's like, in the numbers I gave, you have Rishus HaRam, then you have a 3 tefach high ridge emerging in the middle of Rishus HaRam. Normally that would not be a separate domain, but because of the hole on the inside of it that goes down another 7 for a total of 10, the whole thing becomes a separate Rishus HaYachid all to itself, and that's a very big chiddush. That's what the bartender learns. It's surprising. Tosos doesn't like it at all. Tosos finds it hard to imagine that would be the case because it doesn't seem right since it's not really 10 tefachim high. Why would it be from the outside? And therefore, Tosos says the point here is that your ridge is indeed 10 tefachim off the ground from the outside. Okay? But the point is that it's to get 4 tefachim across, it's from one edge of the rim on the one side of the hole to the other edge of the rim on the other side of the hole. So normally the rule is you need to have a 4x4 tefach surface in order to be Rishus HaYachid. Here you've got that 4x4, but there's a hole in the middle of the 4x4. So Tosafot learns the Chiddush is that even though there's a hole in the middle, it's still considered 4x4 because normal to put like a plank, a board across the hole so you can sort of like attach the bucket or something. So the point is if you have the plank across there, that would be anyways enough, and therefore putting something on the ridge that's a 10 tefachim off the ground, since it's including the far side of the ridge 4 tefachim wide, is sufficient. The Bartanura would ostensibly say that's not necessary, and the whole Chiddush of the Mishnah is not about the width and the 4 tefachim to be four tefachim with a hole in the middle, but rather it's about the depth. And if you'll ask, well, how in the world could a ridge, which from ground level is only three tefachim off the ground, be a separate rishus, or rishus hayachin? How could you include the hole below? So presumably he would answer that the public certainly would go around, even though it's three or even say two tefachim off the ground, the ridge around the well, still the public would circumvent that hole. Why? Because although the top of the ridge is just two tefachim above the ground, the next step's a doozy. If you'd walk straight over, traverse straight over the bore, you'd go tumbling in a full 10 tefachim from the top of the ridge to the bottom of the hole. And that being the case, the public would walk around it, and therefore it has a din of being a domain all to itself. So we'll go with the Bar Tanura as our hero and say simply, even the Chiddush, the Mishnah, is that even if the ridge around the pit is just two or three tefachim high, you can add the depth of the well to reach a total of 10 to make that ridge be Rishus Yachid all to itself, enough to make a person chayev if he put something from the Rishus HaRabim onto that ridge, or took from the ridge and put something into the Rishus HaRabim. As for the Sela, which we skipped, that was just a big, like a rock in the middle of the Rishus HaRabim. Again, so if the rock is 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide, it has a status of domain all to itself, even though it's in the middle of the Rishus HaRabim. Since people circumvent the rock, it has its own domain. And if you pick something off the ground in the Rishus HaRabim and put it on top of that rock has its own status and would be Rishus Yachid, and therefore you'd be doing a proper Hachnasa, bring from Rabim to Yachid, and be liable to Chatas, and vice versa, if you take from the top of the rock and put it into the Rishus HaRabim, again, you'd be liable from taking from a Rishus HaYachid and being Motzi into the Rishus HaRabim. Shabbos, Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, 11:3. We now return to the topic of throwing, Zrika. So it says, Hazorik Arba Amos, if one throws something for Amos, and that something is sticky, think like a piece of sticky bubblegum, and it lands against the wall and sticks there. So it's traversed for Amos in the Rishus HaRabim. So then, Lamala Masar Tefachim, if the place where it sticks is more than 10 Tefachim off the ground, so its resting place is not the Rishus HaRabim. It's part of the Makom Patur, as we said before, above 10 Tefachim is a Makom Patur, and therefore he will be exempt altogether. It's Kazorek Ba'avir, as if he threw it in the air and it never landed, never, it's high up in the air. Lamata Masar Tefachim, however, if he throws it and it is landing on the wall at a height of less than 10 tefachim, that means it's coming to rest inside the Rishus HaRabim. And since it's stuck to the side of the wall, it's considered to be at rest. That's the hanacha. So then it's kazorik ba'aretz. It's no different than if you threw it straight onto the floor. And that being the case, if you threw four amos, he'll be liable for zrika, to chayav hatzah, transferring four amos in the Rishus HaRabim by throwing. The Mishnah continues, hazorik ba'aretz arba amos. If one throws something on the ground for amos, like we said before, you take a football, you throw it four amos away from you. So then, chayav, you're liable. You bring a chatas because, again, you did a transference. You did like a havara, a transference of four amos in Rishus HaRabim, and zrika, throwing, is a tolda of hotzah. We said that before, but now we're going to have a new insight. What happens if you threw it and you intended that it would, the ball that you're throwing should only go three amos away from you, but it just rolls further than expected and rolls beyond the four amos threshold? What then? Zarek l'toch arba amos, if you threw it intending for the ball that you're throwing to land within arba amos and stay there, but v'nizgal gel chutz l'arba amos, but it rolls away further until it's a full four amos away from you, then patr, then you'll be exempt. Why? Exempt from achatas, because even though you did transfer the ball or whatever you're throwing more than four amos, that wasn't your intention. Your intention was to do less than four amos, and therefore the hotzah act, the zrika, the throwing, lacks one of the conditions of melech machsheves. It's not what you intended to happen, and that being the case, you won't be liable. On the flip side, chutz la'arba amos. What happens if you threw that thing, like the ball, intending it to go more than four amos away, and then it throws a distance of more than four amos, but then it comes to rest for a moment and then it rolls back towards you, coming to rest a second time within arba amos. What then? So then you'll be chayav, as the Mishnah says, chutz la'arba amos. If you threw it intending for the thing you're throwing to go more than four amos away, v'nizgagel toch arba amos, but then it rolls back towards you to end up within four amos, still chayev, you'd be liable. Now, just I want to clarify, the Gemara speaks out, and the Mishnah is not clear like this, but this is essential to understand, as the Bar Tanura speaks out himself. You're only liable if the thing you threw came to rest for an instant, stopped moving momentarily, at a distance of more than four amos away, as you had intended. And then, I don't know, the wind picked up, or it was on a slant, or whatever, still shaking a little bit internally, and it rolled back towards you. But if it simply, let's say, bounced off a wall or something and never came to rest, So then when it finally comes to rest, it's within Arba Amos. You don't get off on the technicality of having not fulfilled your intention of throwing it four Amos away. So though the mission doesn't say it has to come to rest very briefly, and when I say briefly, I mean actually resting. I don't mean like the theoretical, you know, instantaneous stop for an instant as it, you know, changes directions. I don't mean that. I mean it has to come to rest for a moment, then it ends up, you know, by itself, quote unquote, rolling back towards you. It's too late. You'll be chayav. Shabbos, Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Dalet, 11:4. We now discuss the status of bodies of water, starting with the sea and other large bodies of water. And there the rule is that the sea, etc., has a din of being a carmelis. That is to say, there's not enough normal, heavy, regular traffic like the midbar in the ocean, and therefore it's not Rishus HaRam, but it's not closed in with walls, not Rishus HaYachid, rather it's a carmelis. And that being the case, Hazorek B'yam, if one throws in the ocean, let's say he's doggy paddling the ocean and he has his little bottle with his message inside of it, Arba Amos, and he throws it at a distance of four Amos, so Pater, he'll be exempt because it's a carmelis, not Rishus HaRam or Rishus HaYachid, and therefore he's only Asur Medirabanan, so Pater from bringing a Chatas. Now, what happens if you have a smaller body of water, let's say even just an overgrown puddle? So we're going to talk about the rakak. The rakak is a muddy, disgusting puddle in a pothole. So the question is, at what point does the rakak in the middle of Rishus HaRabim lose its status of being part of the Rishus HaRabim? So we say, imhaya rakak maim Rishus HaRabim halachas bo. If you have a main thoroughfare, Rishus HaRabim, and it intersects with a deep puddle of water, of gross, you know, murky water, so the status of that rakak is going to be part of the Rishus HaRabim. Hazark l'tocho, arba amos, if one throws arba amos and it ends up in the puddle instead of on the Rishus HaRabim, still chayiv, you'll still be chayiv, because the rakak is still part of the Rishus HaRabim. People who are walking the Rishus HaRabim walk through it. The kamu rakakamayim, and how far does that go? How deep can that pothole of water be and still be considered to be part of the Rishus HaRabim? Pachos masar tfachim. Here we go down all the way to up to 10 tfachim. Usually the rule is that once a hole is more than 3 tfachim deep, so then it already becomes offset from the Rishus HaRabim as a carmelis, but since this is full of water and murky, and the public sort of tramples on through it and deals with it, and therefore unless it's a full 10 tfachim deep, which would make it now a separate Rishus altogether, it has the status of being part of the Rishus HaRabim. Now the Mishnah is something quite unusual. It totally repeats itself. It says the very same words again, rakak maim, if you have a puddle of water, Rishus HaRabim halachas bo, and the public thoroughfare passes through over that rakak, that puddle, hazorek besocha arba amos chayev, one who throws into that puddle, the pothole filled with water, he'll be chayev. We said that a minute ago. So the Bar Tanura brings two things that this is coming to add. The first is that even if it's a very wide pothole, let's say it's four amos wide, it doesn't matter. It's still not going to get its own separate status. It's part of the Rishus HaRabim because the public does pass on through that big puddle. And second of all, it tells that even though passing through a deep puddle of water is certainly not very easy, and therefore it's not the normal way of passage, it's passage al yedei rechak, like a difficult, not normal way of passing through, and therefore people don't pass through in the normal, swift, convenient way they normally pass through the Rishus HaRabim. Nevertheless, it's still considered to be part of the Rishus HaRabim, and that's sufficient enough to still be a bona fide Rishus HaRabim to make one chayiv if one would throw arba amos ending up in that Rishus HaRabim, the puddle in the Rishus HaRabim itself, the rakak. Shabbos Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Hey, 11:5. We continue on with Zorek throwing and the sea being a carmelis. So the Mishnah says, Hazorek min hayam liyabasha. If one would be in the sea, let's say he's like doggy paddling in the ocean, and he throws his bottle to dry land. So since the sea is a carmelis, and the dry land, let's say, is Rishus HaRabim, so the transfer from the carmelis to Rishus HaRabim would be forbidden midrabanan, but he'd be pater since midaraisa he did not do malacha. And same would be umin hayabash liyam. If he would transfer it, meaning, let's say, he would throw from dry land that bottle into the ocean. Min hayam lesfina, if one would throw something from the water, meaning he's doggy paddling again in the ocean, and he throws that bottle into a boat. Now the boat is going to be Rishus HaYachid. The boat has walls that are 10 high. It's got a platform on a deck of 4x4 tvachim, so it's Rishus HaYachid. And that being the case, he's transferring from the carmelis of the ocean onto the Rishus HaYachid. Or umin hasfina liyam, and the same would be if he threw from the deck of the boat, the Rishus HaYachid, into the ocean, the Karmelis. In all those cases, forbidden the Rabbanan. But it's Pater, since it's Midoraisa, it's only a Karmelis. And the same goes, umin hasfina lechaverta. If one would throw from one boat to another boat, also Pater. Now, that's a little different. One boat to another boat means from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaYachid. Now, really, you're allowed to transfer from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaYachid, Midoraisa, for sure. Midrabanan, one can't transfer from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaYachid unless there's an heir of Chatzeros. But this Mishnah is, so far, a step before that. At this moment, we're talking about even though when you have a Karmelis, meaning the Yam, the ocean, interceding between the two private domains. So even then, you'd be Pater, of course, because as you said in the previous Mishnah, a couple of Mishnahs ago, when one throws from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaYachid, and the Rishus HaRabim is in the middle, so then one would be exempt, since the Akira happens in Rishus HaYachid and the Hanacha happens in Rishus HaYachid, even though it transfers through the Rishus HaRabim, even if we're talking about below Ten Tefachim, which is a bona fide Rishus HaRabim, the Chacham hold that you're Pater. Over there in that Mishnah, we had said that Rabbi Kiva holds that one is Chayev, in such a scenario, because he had the cheat of Kluta Kamisha Hunchadamia, that if the object that's being thrown is in the airspace, it is as if it's come to rest, you know, at each instant. And that being the case, you had a hanacha, so you'd be liable. That was in the previous Mishnah, when we're throwing from Shus HaYachid, the Shus HaYachid, and the Shus HaRabim passed between the two. That was back in Mishnah Aleph. But here we have a Karmelis between the two. Between the two Rishus HaYachid of the boats, there's a Karmelis. Therefore, even Rabbi Akiva would agree that you'd be Pater, because even if you're throwing through the Karmelis and you have Kluta, as if it's come to rest in midair, so to speak, still it's going to rest in a Karmelis, which is not liable. Therefore, for all those cases, all five of those cases, the din is Pater. Let me read through the Mishnah clean, that first sentence, make sure it reads properly to you. Hazark min hayam liyabasha, one who throws from the ocean to the dry land, the Rishus HaRabim. Min hayabasha liyam, or from the dry land to the ocean, the Karmelis. Umin hayam lesfina, from the Karmelis to the Rishus HaYachid, the boat, umin hasfina liyam, or from the boat, the Rishus HaYachid, to the yam, the Karmelis. Or the fifth case, umin hasfina lechaverta, from one boat to another boat, even if you have the Karmelis between the two. In all those cases, Pater. Pater again, in the Mishnah means like all cases, essentially. Pater aval asr, meaning you're forbidden, you're exempt from any, let's say, a chatas liability, no korban to be brought, but it's pater aval asr, it's forbidden midrabanan. Now we talk about transfer from boats themselves. So since each boat is a separate Rishus HaYachid, if you have two boats and you want to transfer from one to the next, it says Sfinos Keshuros Zubazu, if you have two boats that are tied together, so then Metalton Mazulazu, since you'll have no interceding Karmelis between the two of them, they're bound together, so then you could transfer from one boat to another boat, because that's a Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaYachid. Provided, the Mishnah does not say this, but it's certainly true, provided that you make an Erev Chatzeros, as I mentioned before, and we'll see more about it later on, especially in Erevin. If you want to transfer from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid, even when they're directly connected by only Rishus HaYachid, like through a window or a door or a hallway, and like the lobby of your hotel or the hallway of your apartment building, etc., in all those cases, Midoraisa has no problem. Midorabanan, the rabbis were afraid that people get confused, and since you're transferring from one person's home to another person's home, or one person, in this case, is one person's boat to another person's boat, it will seem like maybe a transfer. We want you to connect the two domains together, the Rishus HaYachid domains. And how would you do that? With an Erev Chatzeros, you get aside some bread or matzah, but it has to be bread, really, or something else with the status of bread like matzah. And you would say this matzah is for the residents of both these two ships or whatever, apartments, etc. And that bread then is ma'ached. It combines the two rishios in some way to make them a single rishios for the perspective of Shabbos. It's an eruv because it's ma'arev. It combines the two domains. So that will be okay then. So same with the boats. If you have two boats, they're tied one to the other. So then you could transfer from one rishios yachid, boat A, to another rishios yachid, part B, provided that not only they tied together, as the Mishnah says, but also that you have an eruv chatzeros to combine them. But if they're not tied together, even if the two boats are still abutting one to the next, meaning they're adjacent and they're close together, still it will be forbidden. You cannot transfer one boat to the other boat. Since they're not tied together, invariably the boats will come to separate and there'll be an interceding Karmelis between the two of them. And because that's forbidden to transfer from one to the other, even an Erev wouldn't help. Here we're saying the boats, if you want to transfer between two boats, they must first be tied and securely so that there is no intervening or possibility of an intervening karmelis. And at that point, you could transfer from one boat to the next, again, once you have your Erev Chatzeros in place.
Aleph Mishnah Vav 11:6. Since we're talking about throwing, the Mishnah will take the opportunity to revisit a topic we discussed back in the 7th parak. That was the beginning of Klal Gadol, when we set the rules regarding violating the Isra Doraisa Chilul Shabbos. So there we said that if one violates an Isra Doraisa b'shogeg inadvertently, then he is chai v'chatas. He brings the korban chatas. That's only if it was shogeg. Remember, we had three cases of shogeg. Either he didn't know there was such a thing as Shabbos, he didn't know that today was Shabbos, or he didn't know this thing that he did, this act he did, was forbidden on Shabbos. The point is, shogeg is one did a willful act, but his violation of Shabbos was inadvertent. It wasn't willful. In contrast, if one does a malacha b'mezid, intentionally, or b'onus, against his will, then he would not bring a korban chatas, as we discussed over there. So now throwing brings us to an interesting place in terms of like a laboratory, a halachic laboratory, because you recall that obviously throwing requires both an akira and a hanacha, a setting into motion and a putting in place. And those can be divided in time by a good amount of time could divide the akira and hanacha. So our mission is going to explore what happens if only one or the other, the akira or the hanacha, was done by shogeg. So, and the Mishnah will resolve it to say that in such a scenario, one will be exempt from bringing a korban chatas, because as the Mishnah will say explicitly, the principle is if both the techila, the beginning, and the sof, the end of a malacha, is done in shkaga, inadvertently, so then one brings a chatas, but otherwise one is not able to bring a chatas. So the Mishnah says inside, hazorek, if one throws something, v'nizkar, and then he remembers, la'acha sheyatza miyado, after it's already left his hand, that you can't do this on Shabbos. So then the beginning, the akira, was done b'shkaga, but by the time it lands, it will now already be not b'shkaga. He's now aware of what he's doing, of what he's done. So then he'll be pater from bringing a korban chatas. And the Mishnah says, similarly, if kalta acher, if someone else intercepts the thing that he threw. Now, this actually is a different point. We also established back previously that for one to be liable to bring a chatas, he has to do the whole malacha by himself, assuming it's a one-person job. And here, someone else did the second half of the malacha. Someone else did the hanacha, since he grabbed it. And that being the case, again, both parties will be potter, because neither one did the whole malacha. Same goes kal to kelev. If it wasn't a person, but rather a dog intercepted the rock, the frisbee that he threw, again, since he didn't achieve his end of having the hanacha done by himself, so then he'll be putter. In this case, if he was aiming for the dog's mouth and the dog was sort of inanimate and the frisbee lands in the dog's mouth and stays there, so then he actually will be liable. This is true even though the dog's mouth is, of course, not a makom dalet al dalet, it's not a 4x4 tefachim. Nevertheless, since he intended it to land there, he described the significance of the dog's mouth, assuming it did, to be a significant place. So therefore, it's as if it had the 4x4 measurement. And therefore, in that scenario, in that kind of weird scenario, he actually would be liable. But in any case, our Mishnah is focusing on the fact that either it happened to land in the dog's mouth, or the dog intercepts it, so then he's not doing the whole malacha by himself, and therefore he'll be exempt from bringing the korban chatas. Oshin nisrafa, one more case. Here, while in mid-flight, the frisbee that he throws incinerates, lightning strikes it, or it goes over a huge fire or something, and therefore never comes to rest. If it doesn't come to rest, then there'll never be anacha. He didn't do both sides. So in all those scenarios, patur, he'll be exempt. Now this principle of having to do both the tchil and the sof, the beginning and end, in a state of shkaga, doesn't just apply to hotzah, transferring by zrika, by throwing. It would be in any scenario. So for example, again, we're going to have a case of throwing here, but we're not focused on the malacha of hotzah here. We're focused on the malacha of making a chabura, making someone bruised or bleed. So if you dislodge the blood from its place, that's already a tolda of shchita, of slaughtering, because anytime you produce someone's blood, it's Matilas Neshama, you're taking away some of his life. So the case here is Zarak, a person threw this rock, La'asos Chabura, and he intended that the victim that he's going to, the rock will get hit by, will get bruised. Bein ba'adam, bein ba'behema. Doesn't matter if the intended victim is a person or an animal. Bruising animals might be something different in terms of the technicality of what malacha it is, but it doesn't matter. In all those cases, v'nizkar, and then he remembers while that rock is in flight, that it's Shabbos, he may not do this. Ad shlo na'asa chabura, prior to the bruise being made. Then pater, the person who threw it will be exempt, because again, by the time the malacha was done of making the chabura, or reddening the hide of the animal, already it wasn't done in a state of unawareness, of inadvertence. He was already mindful that it was forbidden to do this, and then it was done. So therefore, pater, he won't bring a korban chatas. Zeha klal, this is the principle that governs this whole idea. Kol chay ve'chatas einan chayavin ad shetehei tchilasan v'sofan shkaga. Any crime that carries with the penalty of bringing a chatas, one is not liable to bring the chatas unless he does that avera, the chil shabbos, both from the beginning to the end, in a state of shkaga, of inadvertence. Now, whenever the Mishnah says zeha klal, this is the principle, it comes to add something, and the Gemara asks, what is it going to add here? So we're adding a case, for example, of a person walking on Shabbos, where he's carrying something dal amos, the Rosh Hashanah Rabban, and after walking two amos, inadvertently, not forgetting it's Shabbos, he remembers it's Shabbos, but he walks two more amos, so a total of four. So then, again, you have the beginning being in shkaga, but the end being not b'shkaga, he'll again be potter for bringing a chatas. The Mishnah finishes up by saying, t'chilas and shkaga, if the beginning were in a state of inadvertence, the sof and zadon, but by the end he knows what's going on, or t'chilas and zadon, or he starts out the act willfully being machal Shabbos, of a sof and shkaga, but by the time it ends, he's already forgotten it's Shabbos. In all those cases, paturin, he'll one will be exempt from bringing the korban chatas, ad shetei t'chilasan v'sofan shkaga. He won't be chayv unless both the beginning and the end are done b'shogeg, inadvertently. So this is, of course, very repetitious language. The question is, why is it doing this? And the Gemara answers that it's emphasizing that it's what's operative is the beginning and the end of the act. But the middle of the act is not important. So in some weird hypothetical scenario where a person throws something very far, he throws it in a case of, in a state of shkaga, and mid-flight he remembers for a moment that it's Shabbos, and uh-oh, and then by the time the thing lands, he's forgotten it's Shabbos again, for example, in that strange scenario, he would be liable for a chatas. So the point is, it's not that the whole act from beginning to end must be done in shkaga, but rather that the whole act beginning and end must be done b'shkaga.